The last time I spoke with you guys, the Giants had just come off a 3-game sweep of the Atlanta Braves. And in that time, they've kind of gone up and down. The offense still isn't clicking. They dropped 2 of 3 to the division rival Los Angeles Dodgers, as well as losing 2 out of 3 to the Cleveland Guardians at home. But in the midst of all that, they managed to pull off one of the biggest blockbuster trades in my lifetime as a San Francisco Giants fan. We are in the Rafael Devers era of San Francisco Giants baseball. Let's talk about it. I'm your host, Darius Lott, and this is Second and King.
Welcome to Second and King.
From high, it's a deep, it is high.
Your one-stop shop for everything San Francisco Giants.
And there's a shot, deep right field by Crawford. Adios, pelota!
And now, here's your host, Darius Lott.
Yeah!
What's going on, y'all? Welcome back to another edition of Second and King. I am your host, as I said at the top, Darius Lott. And today, it's kind of weird to feel like the games are secondary almost, but and they are important. I'm not saying that the games aren't important, but the last time I talked to you guys, things were going relatively slow from an offensive standpoint for the Giants. And for the most part, they still kind of are. They're still trying to find a way to spark the offense and get it going on a more consistent basis and rack up some wins here as they continue to push towards a playoff spot. But out of nowhere, on last Sunday, just before Sunday Night Baseball was about to kick off, we were about to have this decisive, pivotal game of this 3-game series against the Los Angeles Dodgers at Dodger Stadium. And news drops just out of the blue. I believe it was Robert Murray with the tweet. It was the tweet heard around the world for in many respects, that Rafael Devers, the big slugger from the Boston Red Sox, was headed out west to join the San Francisco Giants. And I've been a part of some, as my time as a Giants fan, been a part of some major acquisitions, you know, and trades, free agent signings, what have you. A lot of guys have come through San Francisco and have been, you know, key contributors for the Giants in the time that I've been alive. But this trade is huge. It almost, you know, overshadows all of those. And those weren't small ones. A lot of those deals, you know, helped the Giants, you know, win crucial games, helped them win playoff series, helped them win World Series. But you can point to a few that aren't exactly superstars. A few of my favorites, you know, Hunter Pence, Jake Peavy, Marco Scudero, you know, those are just some of the smaller, you know, I mean, I guess they are smaller, but they're also somewhat noteworthy because, you know, Hunter Pence is one of the most beloved Giants, you know, in history. You know, he's one of the a fan favorite for a lot of Giants fans. I know he's one of my personal favorites, but, you know, Hunter won't ever be confused as being a superstar like that player of that type of magnitude. He's kind of a superstar to us as Giants fans. You know, we kind of revere our players in very high regard anyway, regardless of their status or stature among, you know, overall baseball pundits and fans. But Rafael Devers is a dude. Like, he is like one of those guys that you think about as it being a difference maker for a team, and especially in the middle of a lineup. And the Giants, out of nowhere, Buster Posey, Zach Manassian, put their heads together, and they pulled this trade off. And almost, I want to say the 11th hour, because it was right before we were getting ready to start this game on Sunday against the Dodgers. And they pulled it off, and they got it done. And Rafael Devers, I have to keep saying it because it almost doesn't feel real, but Rafael Devers is a San Francisco Giant now, and it's insane. So a little bit about the trade itself. So the Giants, you know, they get what they want. They wanted Rafael Devers, and they got him in exchange for left-handed pitcher Kyle Harrison, right-handed pitcher Jordan Hicks, outfield prospect James Tibbs III, and minor league pitcher Jose Bayo, not to be confused with the Bayo that is currently on the Red Sox. There's no relation there. But yeah, that was the return package for Rafael Devers being sent to Boston. And it took everybody by surprise. Like, it took the national media by surprise. It took Giants fans by surprise. Hell, it took Red Sox fans by surprise. And I don't blame them, because they're probably thinking, there's no way we're losing Devers. One, he's signed long-term. You know, he's under contract. He signed a 10-year, $313 million deal with the Red Sox. You know, he signed through 2033, you know, until he's, age 36? So, no way he's going anywhere. And then, bam, this happens out of the blue, you know, in June, nonetheless. That's another thing. Trades like this typically don't happen until, July, until we get to, the trade deadline. This is probably the earliest that I can remember a player of Devers caliber going this early, you know, before any real other deals have gone down. And given what the trade market is shaping up to be, potentially, he might be the biggest bat that people didn't even realize he was available. You know, he might be the biggest bat you could even get, and nobody knew, at least outside of a few other teams, knew that he could be possibly on the block. And the Giants knew this, and they went after it. So, and like I was saying before, it stunned everybody. Like, it came out of nowhere, to the point where Kyle Harrison was slated to start that Sunday night game. He was in the middle of his bullpen session, getting warmed up, getting ready to go, and he gets stopped, pulled to the side, and told, "You're headed to Boston. You've been traded to the Boston Red Sox." And it was just like, I can only imagine how that was. And then Sean Gelly had to go get up and start throwing. He now has an impromptu start that he has to make. Devers, on the other side, he and the Red Sox had just finished up a sweep of the New York Yankees. They're on the plane, and I can't remember if they were mid-flight or about to take off, but he was, you know, about to travel with the team to Seattle for their next series, and he's being told, like, "Oh yeah, you're gonna go West Coast, but you're actually gonna go to San Francisco. You're a San Francisco Giant now." Like, insane turn of events for the Giants and for this fan base, because this lit up the whole fan base. Everybody I saw on Twitter and all over different social media platforms were raving, excited about this move, because it was the kind of move that felt kind of lost, that the Giants could even get done. Like, could the Giants even lure a player like Devers to San Francisco? You know, they had tried, you know, in free agency. They went after Aaron Judge. They went after Shohei Ohtani. Even before that, they went after Giancarlo Stanton in a trade. They went after Bryce Harper. And they were all, you know, turned, every single time, the Giants were turned away. They were not able to acquire those players that they wanted for the team, for the fan base, and it stuck in our craw for a long time that, you know, maybe we don't get the high-priced free agents that we want, the big sluggers in the middle of our lineup that we want. We probably won't see another Barry Bonds type hitter in Oracle Park ever again. That was the feeling. That was the overall sentiment. And then Buster Posey, in what, 6 months? He's been doing this job? Just, you know, in 6 months, he did something that Farhan Zaidi couldn't do in 6 years, his time with the Giants. He pulls off, like, for one, he goes out this past offseason. He sees the glaring need at shortstop. He gets Willy Adames. Before anyone can turn and pivot to Adames after Juan Soto signs, he's all over that. He grabs him first. So, and I thought that was a very smart plan of attack by Posey and Manassian to go and get Willie right away, because they know they have a glaring hole at shortstop. So they bring in Willie, and, you know, they supplement the roster with other smaller moves. You know, they don't do much else after that. And, you know, the Giants lean a lot on their starting pitching. They're grinding out wins whenever they can, getting the timely hits when they can. And, you know, they've had this really solid start to the season. But it always felt like they needed more. Like, they were always lacking in some area. They were definitely lacking in terms of power, but they were also lacking in terms of getting the big hit and, like, guys just getting good pitches to hit and just having better at-bats. Well, now with Devers slotted in as the three-hole hitter, and, you know, that's what he's been since he's gotten here. He's already played a few games with the Giants. It could very well be that. Like, just the thought, the threat of Devers in the middle of the lineup could help guys around him. We haven't seen it yet, but, you know, small sample size, it's gonna, you know, he, being Devers, has to settle in, kind of find his rhythm, you know, a new team, new city, new teammates, new coaches, new manager. He has to kind of settle in and kind of feel, you know, get his bearings about him as he, you know, proceeds in this new chapter of his career. You know, it's not easy to turn around immediately after being in one organization your entire career, for the most part, for the first half of your career, rather, you know, since you were a young teenager, and then turn around and, you know, try to adapt and adjust to this new one. So we will see. Hopefully it gets better offensively for the Giants. They can find some consistency, they can find some rhythm, and I think Rafi could help with that. I also think maybe some changes to the coaching staff could help that too, but that's just me kind of ranting and raving about how I'm not enthralled with how the hitting instructors have been doing, the hitting coaches, Pat Burrell and them, and how it's kind of translated to very poor success. Like, the Giants won a game yesterday where they only had, what, 5 hits? And they had 2 through 5 innings. So hopefully something changes on that front. But we're going to go back to how this even happened. Like, the fact that Rafael Devers is even available is insane, because it didn't feel like a possibility. It didn't feel like he was going to be moved. And apparently there have been fractures in the fabric of the Red Sox organization that have kind of led to this point, and a lot of distrust and just hurt feelings on both sides, both on Rafael Devers' side and the Boston Red Sox side. So, and it goes back to the signing for the Red Sox of Alex Bregman. Alex Bregman, you know, third baseman, used to be with the Astros. He was a free agent last offseason. And the Giants, I mean, sorry, not the Giants, the Red Sox signed him fairly late in the game and brought him in. And I can't remember, because I heard this from a number of different podcasts and interviews, that apparently the original plan was Devers stays at third and Bregman plays second. I couldn't find any articles that actually support that. So, like, if Devers was told, if he's coming in, Bregman, that is, if he's coming in, that he would be safe playing third and Bregman's going to move to second, and then he gets to spring training and Bregman is at third taking grounders, you know, yeah, I can imagine him feeling some type of way. But we don't know. I don't know personally if that is the case. But here's the thing, and I'm going to defend the Red Sox a little bit here. They are within their right if they ask Rafael Devers, we want to bring in Bregman. He's going to play third, and you're going to be the full-time DH. They are well within their right to do that. That is fine. That is what apparently they wanted. That's what they wanted him to do. And he seemed up for it. He seemed fine. But he did ask his manager, Alex Cora, do you think I'm going to need, you know, to take grounders in the field? Do you think I'll need reps in the field? You know, will I be playing the field at all? And Alex Cora and basically the Red Sox said they are keeping him as the primary designated hitter for all of 2025, and he will not see the field. That is what Devers was told by Red Sox brass, what he was told by his manager. So he's the DH, and he's cool with that. That's fine. Bregman will play third base. Then something unforeseen happened. You know, these things happen in sports all the time. You can never prepare for an injury, but that's what happened with the Boston Red Sox. Tristan Casas, their full-time first baseman, he goes down with an injury. He's out for the rest of 2025 with a ruptured left patella tendon. So now they have a hole at first base and not a lot of alternatives. So after not taking in a single grounder at first base the entire season to this point, the Red Sox then turn around and ask, we're going to need you at first base. And Devers says, no. He basically says no. You know, he was even asked straight up in an interview. He was there with his translator, and they asked him, well, if the Red Sox asked you to play first, would you do it? And he said, no. He flat out said, I won't do that because I was told, because Rafi was basically told, I wouldn't have to. Now, like I said before, Red Sox are well within their right to say, we're going to bring in Bregman. We want him to play third. We're going to move you off of third, and you're going to be the full-time DH. That is fine. But I think then it's not, they're not just, they're a little less justified in asking Rafi to switch again, this time to a position in first base that he's never played before. That's where I think the issue is, and it just sounds like the whole issue in Boston comes down to lack of communication. It's not, it shouldn't fall on Rafael Devers when, you know, Tristan Casas gets hurt, and rather than finding alternatives, you know, to man things at first base, you know, rather than do that, it's not on Devers for that. You know, rather than do that, they want to just put Devers at first base and say, call it good, you know. But it's like, that didn't work for Rafi, you know. Obviously it didn't work for him at all, because they decided they didn't want to have him play you know, they decided that they didn't want to find other means at first base, and they just wanted Rafi to stay, to just fill in there because they asked, even though they told him, you're practically just the DH, and that's all you have to worry about. Don't even bring your glove. Just leave your glove. That's basically the gist of what was being said here. And it's kind of crazy that this whole situation unfolded the way it did, you know, from the Red Sox standpoint, because it seemed so simple. It seemed as simple as, let's have a conversation, you know, and let's nip this in the bud early. And apparently there was the owner of the Sox went to Kansas City while the team was there. He got on a plane, flew out there, and had a conversation with Rafi Devers. And we didn't really see or hear anything about what transpired or what came through with that. It kind of just came out of nowhere. But yeah, they had a meeting apparently of some kind, and nothing really came of it. We didn't really hear a whole lot about it. And that was kind of the last, like, big thing we heard on the Red Sox front about the Devers situation. So fast forward to now, Buster and Zach Manassian are having conversations about, you know, what they can do for the team. So Posey then calls Breslow about, in the way that they put it in this Pavlovich article, something minor. But there was something that I guess Buster couldn't stop thinking about. So he opens a group chat that he has with GM Zach Manassian and assistant GM Jeremy Shelley. And Posey's in the midst of this conversation with Craig Breslow. And he says, do you think I should ask about Devers? And he waited, and then he got a thumbs up emoji. And then it was kind of going on from there. And it sounds like these talks have been going on for quite some time. It says Buster's been in contact with Craig for a month now. It all started with that text message. Like, should I ask about Devers? And I guess Buster was he kept his eyes and ears peeled on the situation that was happening in Boston with Devers, and asked, would he be available? And he kind of, the way Buster described it is, it would get close, then it would not get close. There would be some traction, then it goes silent again. And he wasn't sure at first, but I guess as we got closer to, you know, mid-June, those talks heated up yet again. And it sounds like the way that this happened, I mentioned earlier about how early this, you know, this happened. And it takes me back to the offseason. Remember how quickly Buster went out and got Willy Adames before anyone else could pivot from Juan Soto and their Juan Soto plans. And that how quickly that happened. He got out ahead of it. Well, it seems like that was the same intention, the same thinking Posey had when it came to Rafael Devers, because it sounded like they wanted to avoid the madness that comes along with the trade deadline, you know, and, you know, multiple teams getting in and getting their bids in and all their different packages. And eventually the Giants went out, and apparently the Giants weren't the only teams interested in Rafael Devers, because it was reported teams like the Toronto Blue Jays, the San Diego Padres, and there was one more team that was also interested in Rafael Devers. But ultimately, it was the Giants that got him. And I think the main thing was, and then it wasn't confirmed or denied, it was the money. The, you know, the Giants were willing, seemingly, to take on the remainder of Rafael Devers' existing contract, whereas I think other teams weren't willing to do so. And I think that was the big factor in the Giants getting this deal done. He is roughly owed $255 million over the next 8.5 seasons. And, you know, and that wasn't a guarantee either, because Buster needed, you know, that would require a buy-in from ownership. And you need to be on the same page with. But luckily, Buster Posey, being who he is and what he's done for the Giants already, it was kind of a no-brainer for Greg Johnson to be all in on this. It just seemed like, well, if we can actually get this done, yeah, I'll front, you know, we'll front that and let's get it done. And that's exactly what happened. And just like that, we have Rafael Devers hitting in the middle of the San Francisco Giants lineup. It still doesn't feel real, but here we are. And funny enough, the next opponent for the Giants coming up, starting tonight, in fact, is going to be the Boston Red Sox, who are in town. Rafael Devers will play against his former team starting tonight, this weekend. I will be at Sunday's game. I'm trying to get caught me one of those Jung-Hoo Lee hooded jerseys that they're giving out. But yeah, it's crazy what has happened here. I know I keep saying it because it just feels like a dream. Like, I had the first thing I did immediately when this trade went through, which I saw that it was real, is I called my dad. You know, first he didn't pick up his phone. So then I called my mom and told her, please, when you get a chance, tell dad to call me back ASAP, because my dad has been a fan of Rafael Devers for years. And he even said at one point, man, imagine having him in the middle of the lineup. He'd be great. And here we are. Here we are, 2025, and here he is. Rafael Devers is a San Francisco Giant, and it's incredible. So the Giants get Devers, and he's in the midst of one of his best starts to a season, which didn't start out that way. He actually was struggling right out of the gate. I forget the streak he had opening the season. He had an 0-for going, and it didn't look good, but he has rebounded in spectacular fashion, and the numbers he has right now are very much in line with Rafael Devers-esque numbers. So he's batting 272 with an on-base of 401, 498 slugging, an 899 OPS, and a 151 OPS plus. He's got 15 home runs. And if you're a Giants fan, you know very well, everyone's talking about nobody has crossed the 30 home run mark in San Francisco since Barry Bonds. Well, Rafael Devers is 15 home runs away. He's already halfway there. So, and I know those 15 didn't come with us. You know, they came with the Red Sox, but when it's all said and done, he can have 30. Maybe Elliot Ramos joins him like I predicted. Who knows? But, and in return for Rafael Devers, like I mentioned, a couple of minor leaguers, Jose Bayo, don't know a whole lot about him, other than, you know, he's in low A, and I guess he doesn't throw particularly hard, but he has some good stuff, like some good breaking stuff, some good off-speed stuff. Didn't really get a chance to really dive into him and, you know, what makes him a special kind of player. But one player that I do know that is going to Boston in the exchange for the left-handed hitting Devers, James Tibbs III. He was the first-round pick for the Giants in last year's MLB draft, and he was somebody I was particularly high on. I like Tibbs a lot. The profile on him was very good. Somebody who has good bat-to-ball skills, very good eye at the plate. I actually was working on a prospect profile episode on Tibbs, and it was due to come out Monday, the day after the Devers trade. So I still have that audio and everything. I don't know. That may just be one I scrap. But Tibbs, I think Boston fans are going to like Tibbs. And I think his swing and his play might play well in Fenway if, you know, he gets the call at some point down the line. I think he's still a few years away from being big league ready. But I think Tibbs is a good get for the Boston Red Sox. And they addressed a need in terms of pitching. They needed at least starting pitching. They brought in Jordan Hicks, who was a starter for us and was moved to the bullpen after he was just dreadful. I don't know how Boston plans to use him. I think he's dealing with some injury right now, so he may not be able to pitch for them right now. They get his four-year, $40 million deal off the books. So that's good for the Giants. They don't have to front that anymore, especially given that they're going to be tying their money to bigger things in regards to Rafael Devers. And they also receive left-handed pitching Kyle Harrison. He was once a top prospect for the Giants. Nice, it's the good electric fastball, gets on you quick. It's one of his best pitches. He's been working a lot better this season on improving his off-speed stuff, his slider, his slurving slider, slurve, and, you know, trying to mix in some other things. It looks like he's been working on a changeup as well. But there's a lot to like about Kyle Harrison, and he gets to be reunited with Andrew Bailey, a pitching wizard that used to be with the San Francisco Giants, and we know what Bailey's all about and what he can do. So it's good. I think that's going to be good for Kyle in the long run. I will miss him. I did hold out hope that maybe he starts to turn things around, and it looked like he was starting to turn things around. He got sent down in the minors toward the end of spring training, and I think that was possibly the best thing that happened to him, because he's starting to show a lot of the promise that a lot of scouts had for him. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. We won't see him this weekend, unfortunately, because he was optioned to AAA, which is a move that I'm sure made a lot of Boston Red Sox fans very happy, that the guy that was supposed to be the number one like piece in the Rafael Devers trade is headed to the minor league. So yeah, that was that was certainly a choice. I just really wanted to designate this episode talking about Devers, the whole saga that led to him getting to San Francisco, which led and would lead us to today, and what this could potentially mean for the Giants. And I think it could just mean big things for the Giants going forward, because they've lacked a big bat presence in the middle of the lineup for years since Bonds. Well, Devers fixes that. And if you look at the potential of this lineup, think about it, Jung-Hoo Lee leading off, then you can put Willy Adames, Devers in the middle, Elliot Ramos, you know, Matt Chapman when he comes back, you know, maybe Wilmer Flores gets in there, you know, at first base or whatever. That first five, you know, even six sounds a whole lot better than what the Giants started the year with. And it could potentially even get better. You know, maybe, you know, they add more at the deadline. Maybe Bryce Eldridge gets the call. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of tough right now because Wilmer kind of slots into a bench pinch hit role, first base, you know, platoon with Dominic Smith, who's played well, is also playing well since he got picked up by the Giants. But yeah, you never know. This could be really good for the Giants if they start hitting. That still has to happen, because right now, as we are a few games into the Rafael Devers era, he's done fairly well. His debut game, 2-for-5 with an RBI double, hit a rocket out to Triples Alley. But, you know, the Giants actually won their first game with him, you know, after dropping, you know, those first two to Cleveland. But it has to get going at some point on a consistent basis for this Giants offense, because right now they are a team that is solely held up by its pitching, and they really need to get it going with the bats. So that's where I'll leave it for this one. Thank you guys for joining me for another edition of Second and King. Make sure you follow me on Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. Check out the show on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Make sure you leave a rating and review if you like this. And if you're listening on YouTube, make sure you like the video, subscribe to the channel if you haven't already, and, you know, comment on the videos. Nice to hear what you guys have to say. But that's going to do it for this edition of Second and King. I am your host, Darius Lott, and as always, go Giants.